those of you that are from distant places, welcome to Seattle. It would not be Seattle without rain. So it's Seattle. And our young devotees, we're hoping to communicate with rain stops. So you can get outside and retreat, an effort to take ourselves away from routine day to day. I don't know about all of you, but besides knowing that I have no cell reception, no phone, none of those addictions. There's only one thing. Probably the ocean, but then there's the Holy Name. So, the theme we got together and came up with a nice theme. The importance of humility and in entering into the Holy Name, calling for the Holy Name, crying for the Holy Name. Maybe some of you, of course, at this chapter, people cry for the Holy Name. At least cry, then you can cry for the Holy Name. Shortly before coming here, last weekend was New York Rath Yatra. And each year, following the Sadhu Sangha retreat that takes place now in North Carolina instead of Texas, Madhava was one of the devotees in attendance. Madhava Kirtan singer. And then after the Sadhu Sangha retreat, he goes to Harinam Ashram, Father Hari Prabhu. That would be nice, because the Guru also goes. So I communicated with that and found him in my life. You'll hear it from me soon, once we get internet going again. And we had a nice discussion with Madhava about chanting. So this is a message about chanting from the place of humility. Humility, and that has helped him throughout his life, still today. love the detail. He Einar invited him to come with him to clean the bathrooms. In Hindi, you call them toilets. Not of a machine of a certain type. I never did that in my life. It's not so bad at all. You know how young people can be sometimes. Not just that I don't want to, it's not. So then, I kind of put on his kasha and put on rubber gloves and took his cleaning, scrubbing brushes and went to the toilets to clean the toilets. And Madhava had this existential dilemma. Find her in the toilet thing. And I'm going to say no. And after some brain scrambling, he went and cleaned the toilets. He said it was the best 3 hours of my life. Because I learned humility. I didn't know that history. I found this out. So I shared with Madhava something he may not remember. This is on humility. I met Madhava. I've seen this picture, like many of you may have. Then it wasn't so much on YouTube and all that. But I've seen this picture. And I was in New Vrindavan attending a meeting, which was a GBC meeting of some kind. And we were in some part, and it was the first of the 24-hour kirtan programs that happened in New Vrindavan. A weekend in May, a weekend after Mother's Day weekend. So, I really don't like meetings, but I attend them because I think they're important. And when there was a break in the meeting, I just went to the 24-hour kirtan, sat down, and his eye caught my eye caught his eye, and while he was reading the kirtan. And when he sat down, so he came right up to me. I'd never met him before. He introduced himself. My name is Madhava Das. I've seen the picture of the Rupa Swami. I just have one request. Humility was his request. Please bless me that I may always remember to remain humble. Please bless me that I may never become proud. That's pretty interesting. Introduction, to meet somebody. Ever meet somebody, that's the first thing you meet them, that's what they say. Then, second time I met Madhava was in Manipur. With a kirtan named he hadn't, no other exchange between that and a few years prior. Again, he saw me, came right up to me, and introduced himself again. And please bless me that I may always remain humble. And that I'll never become proud. And that this is genuine, not like circumstantial, but it's what's in his eye. And then, without, anecdotal, it happened the third time. The third time I met him, the same thing. That told me that that's what's in his heart. And what is it that he wishes in life? Relationship with Krishna. But you can't have a relationship with Krishna through the medium of the holy name. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches it. Unless you're humble. But not like a little humble. Like maximum humble. More humble. What does Lord Chaitanya say? Trinadati. More open. Link is strong. That's pretty humble. More. Then, came to the Siddhartha, or there can be a taste for chanting. So then, just on the same theme, just a week ago, 10 days ago, I had my first conversation with Mara, because otherwise it was just a crowd of people and just asking, please bless me that I remain humble. So we had a discussion, and I asked him, when you're absorbed in kirtan, what's in your mind besides the holy names? And he said, just crying out. How do you cry out? You know, like that statement Prabhupada expresses, how you should chant the holy name is like a child calling for the mother. Mothers, you know what that sound is. Sannyasis know what that sound is. We respond differently when we hear that sound. But it's a dependence. That's how can you feel dependent if you're not humble? So this theme of this weekend's retreat is the mood of humility in order to enter into the chanting of the holy name properly, or better, more experientially rather than performance. That's one of the things that I will appreciate this. More than kirtan as performance, he was lamenting that to a degree kirtan has become showmanship rather than the experience of entering into the holy name. Of course, some people do, and other people don't. So that kirtan, and this is japa as well. So, the rule of humility. And I've chosen the prayers of Lord Brahma, specifically focusing on the mood of humility. But of course, there's many, many, many other things. Many, many, many other things. And that many, many, many other things are so wonderful that these prayers of Lord Brahma, well, many of you that are familiar with the Bhagavatam or familiar with Chaitanya Charitamrita will know these verses are quoted again. Like the Brahma Samhita verses in Prabhupada's purports are quoted again and again. Because essences of our whole Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy are presented with the teachings of bhakti. Specifically, the teachings of Braja Bhakti, the residents of Vrindavan, the exalted nature, the speciality. Why do we place such emphasis on Krishna and Vrindavan and his pastimes in Vrindavan? So these prayers share these things. And the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, when Lord Chaitanya gave the holy name, with giving the holy name was the opportunity to enter into the mood of love of the residents of Vrindavan. That was the Mahavadangaya gift of Mahaprabhu. So, the prayers, they're simple, like an ocean. I was thinking about this because of my location. Even driving up here, everything is like sailboats and a navy station and this and that. So maybe in the rooms where you're staying, the rooms where I'm staying, it's all these sailboats and everything is like ocean. So how deep is the ocean? Well, here's the bay. So you know there's some limit. You go out into the ocean and we speak of the ocean as unfathomable. Deep as the ocean. But these prayers of Lord Brahma are more deep than the ocean. So how do you explore the depths of the ocean? Or the depths of what's even more than the ocean? You can't. There's this nice expression used in amongst the followers of Lord Chaitanya that trying to describe describe the glories of the holy name or the glories of Lord Chaitanya or the glories of Krishna as like a dwarf trying to catch the moon. You know what a dwarf is, right? Lunga. Mahavana was a dwarf. Very, very short. When you've seen it, the dwarf is very sharp. Something very special. And then the moon is very tall because the dwarf tried to catch the moon. Like that. Similarly, trying to share this wonderful moon of Lord Brahma and what he's teaching. I'll be the dwarf. And there's the moon. And I'll try to describe some of the glories, but especially that Lord Brahma is revealing in his prayers. The eternal life outcome will be better. Although you can see better. So how does this begin? This is a pastime that was planned by Krishna or conceived of by Krishna or arranged by Krishna to accomplish many things. One of the qualities of Krishna, 64 qualities, Krishna's expert. And one of his symptoms of his expertise is when he does one thing, he's accomplishing many things. And it's not like, you know, when you're chanting japa and you go to the internet and you read a book and you talk on the phone or listen to a conversation on the other side of the world or you think about your day or think about your problems. Do many things at the same time. Not like that. Not normally processing. But Krishna has unlimited, inconceivable potency and with anything he does, many, many things. We'll see as this pastime unfolds. So if the pastime took place when Krishna was just 4 years old. Think of some children that are 4 years. How old is this boy? He's 5. 4. Four. The older one. 4. That's how old Krishna was when this pastime took place. Normally, just like the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, they would begin their education when they turned 5. Like Komara Pashana Kanyo, Naraman Pandala, not that verse. But boys would begin their education at 5. And the Vaishyas, they would begin assisting, in Krishna's case, herding the cows when he turned 5. And Gopal Chandra described Krishna was a little precocious. He wanted to herd the cows when he was 3. 1 year earlier, herd the cows. Mother Jasoda, when she heard this from Krishna, she was in disbelief. Just a little boy, the cows are so big. How can you herd the cows? Just wait. And Krishna insisted. He was adamant, I'm going to herd the cows. So Mother Jasoda went to Nanda Maharaj and said, speak to this boy. He thinks he's going to go herd the cows at 3 years old. So Nanda Maharaj negotiated a settlement with Krishna. He could herd the cows. So there's a big festival on the occasion of Krishna's beginning to herd the cows. Big festival described. And then Krishna went out and herded the calves. So 1 year later, the arrangement with herding the calves was they wouldn't go so far. And then after the morning meal, the boys would come back and they would have the lunch. But Krishna had a plan. So he told Mother Jasoda 1 year later, I want you to prepare lunch so we can not have to come back for lunch. This day, the day that this Agasura demon and the Brahma Vimokan movement took place on the same day, 4 years old. mother disorders and big anxiety. You going to go out with the calves all day long and not come back? Mothers, think about it. 3-year-old, 4-year-old, not come back. Not come back. And it wasn't just protectiveness of the mother, it's the transcendental attachment and love for the beloved. Nandananda. What hardship, what difficulty might Krishna have to undergo as he was out for the whole day? She didn't want, but Krishna insisted, I'm going anyway. So she prepared for lunch. And all the other Dalai boys had their lunch prepared. And that very morning, when Mother Jasoda sent Krishna off, his voice was very special. Imagine having been one of them and having as a brother the other one. They would be like growing up together. They must have lots of fun. So when the other boys went out to the forest that day, the first day that the plan was to not come back, well, who would they encounter but Agastya? And when they saw, you know the pastime, when they saw this big serpent lying in the middle of the path, the other boys said, we've never seen a big cave in the middle of the path like this before. And then they used their rational faculties and said, well, look at those big teeth. That's not a cave. And smell that bad, fishy smell. That's a big serpent. But Krishna will protect us. Come on, let's go inside and look around. And Krishna was standing by, watching the cowherd boys enter into the mouth of Agastya, thinking, this is very bad. Because how will the cowherd boys bear separation from me, not seeing me? They'll want to give up their life. So he wanted to call out for them to not enter the mouth of the Agastya or demon. They had already gone. Krishna became bewildered by his own yoga mind potency for a moment. And then, of course, Krishna himself entered into the mouth of Agastya, expanded his body by one of his mystic powers, and the soul of Agastya went up in the air. Krishna and the cowherd boys came marching down to the mouth of Agastya, and the soul of Agastya merged into the body of Krishna. Brahma had witnessed all this. He had come to visit to have Krishna's darshan, because Krishna is his Lord and Master. Brahma is his servant. He was getting the opportunity to see Krishna, and Krishna is performing his pastimes in this world that are normally visible in Goloka Vrindavan realm. And when he saw this, he was amazed at the power of this little boy. But even more contrasting and bewildering was afterwards, the boys said, time for lunch. And they went and sat down underneath some trees, catching the shade, and they all sat in a circle to join lunch with Krishna. Now this is, we just moved from chapter 12 to chapter 13. Chapter 13 is Krishna's Brahma getting devoted, Vimoha, chapter 13. And as he saw, Krishna was he who had just exhibited this incredible transcendental potency of killing this huge demon, a little four-year-old boy. Now he's in a different mood. He's in the Vrindavan mood. And all the cowherd boys are wanting Krishna to taste their food, holding some up and pushing into Krishna's mouth. Here, taste this. And laughing and joking and frolicking. And Krishna's sitting in the middle enjoying this pastime where each one of the cowherd boys is feeling that Krishna is looking up at me alone. And every one of them is feeling like that, same as the pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu during Radha Yatra, Kirtan. Each person, each cowherd boy in this case, felt Krishna so attached to me. He can't take his eyes from me. He says, the other cowherd boys don't even exist as far as Krishna is concerned, just fixed on me. And each one was thinking that. Just like Maharaj Prataparudra could understand that that's what Lord Chaitanya was doing during Kirtan. Not others couldn't understand it, but Maharaj Prataparudra was given that realization. He could understand the divinity, the unlimited potency of Lord Chaitanya. No, we can't do that. Supposing you look at one person. That's very nice. You can, you know, eye contact, and oh, Mars is paying attention, and we're connecting to him, but all the other people are, don't have that same experience. That I could turn away and see someone else, and then everyone else is different. So, but Krishna's not limited. In relationships, Kosha Rupa, Mataji is what you're speaking about. The relationship of humility, relationships, and the whole thing. Krishna is able to fulfill everyone's relationship. Everyone, simultaneously. He's unlimited. His capacity for relationships is unlimited. Because he's unlimited. His capacity for everything is unlimited. And the degree of intimacy that was being in the exchanges with the cowherd boys was amazing. Just like Uddhava, who was vastly learned outside of Vrindavan, when he went to Vrindavan and saw the intimacy of the love of the residents of Vrindavan, he'd never seen anything like it. Krishna wanted him to experience. Here is Brahma's getting that experience. He's not seen anything. And how great is Brahma? How powerful is Brahma? How intelligent is Brahma? Just take anything. Take anything. Prabhupada would say, the scientists say that they can create life. I challenge them. Make one mosquito. Something that's small, and it can fly in any direction, and it can make another one. You have to make one mosquito. Or take anything. You know, the question of the origin of life, since the beginning of time, people have asked that question. Scientists, philosophers, religionists, everybody, and thoughtful people ask that question. How much money has been spent in investigating the question of the origin of life? Billions and billions and billions. Nobody questions it. One devotee I know is a professor in nanotechnology. You know what nanotechnology is? You know what microtechnology is? You know what a computer is? A computer, before they figured out how to make things small, one computer took an entire building, the components, And then they figured out how to make them small. No. To them, the top of the desk, the laptop. Because of microtechnology. Then there's nanotechnology. It's like smaller than micro. Devotee is a professor of nanotechnology doing research and guiding people with PhD work on it. So it's like, it's not the same as, but it's something like microbiology. You know what biology is? So microbiology is understanding, for example, that the configuration of the strands of amino acids within DNA and RNA. And then they do the genetic engineering. They change out the genes to make them so that, make the corn so that it becomes bigger or looks more yellow or something. Change the genes. GMOs, right? Genetically modified organisms. GMO. Right? So, Brahma knows all about that stuff. Because how did the original configuration of amino acids get to be what it is so that then you can have life? You say life is based upon the configuration of the genes, the amino acids within the strands of DNA. Brahma knows all that. He's, you know, professor of nanotechnology hijab. They can go and study it again, get all the PhDs they want, and then all of the grads to do more studying. He knows all that. He knows the micro, he knows the macro. You know, some people build things. In the Brooklyn Temple area, it's becoming Manhattan, lower Manhattan, although it's in Brooklyn. And all the buildings that are all around the place, you know, 15-story buildings, 20-story buildings, 57-story buildings just down the street from us, all over the place. So someone who lived in homes, maybe you contracted somebody to build your home, maybe you bought your own build homes. So somebody can build a home. That's a task. But Brahma builds the universe. How powerful is Brahma? How deep, how intelligent and how powerful is Brahma? So what happens when somebody becomes very powerful? They're intelligent. Pride. There's a tendency. Krishna had a plan when he arranged for Mother Jasoda to make the lunches that morning. It was a loving relationship with Mother Jasoda. It was an intimate loving relationship with the cows and the cow boys. And it was an intimate loving relationship with Lord Brahma. Krishna has a relationship with each one of us. We have a relationship with Krishna. I don't know if Rupa didn't share with you what she's going to speak about. Along this line. We all have a relationship with Krishna. But we do not have a relationship with Krishna. And we all have, we can do something. Somebody can somebody can speak, somebody can write, somebody can dance, somebody can something. Everybody can do something. And the tendency is to be proud of a little something. And it's when that pride covers the relationship with Krishna, Krishna disappears and it's not us. But Brahma is a very special person to become, to take the pose of Brahma. It's such an important pose that if there isn't the right person, Krishna does it himself. And because Krishna invests that person with this enormous potency and enormous knowledge, and even a little knowledge, about a heart that's clean can be misused and hurt people. Goes on. But Brahma is such a powerful person. And
Krishna wanted to assist him. And then have Brahma be the instrument to assist us in understanding how to be humble when we're doing our devotional service and when we're chanting the holy name. Krishna wanted that. Sometimes Krishna wants us also to become humble. If he's very kind, he'll show that special mercy and help us to become humble. And when he's helping us to become humble, sometimes we say no, because we're attached, and if that's something that we're attached to, just take it away, and we want that something or something, whatever the humility lesson is. So Brahma is teaching us. Now, he didn't get slammed, but he was thinking, based on what he did, he was going to get slammed. We'll hear it in his prayers. Even a big reaction. So, big reactions are helpful to help us become humble. And even before the big reaction comes, the anticipation of the big reaction will help you become humble. If you have the inclination to be humble. So he had this idea, Brahma, that he wanted he just killed Asura demon, but now look, he's conducting himself like a child. No, who is he? I have all this power. Let me just flash some of my power, some exhibit, some of my potency, and see what Krishna is going to do. Is he going to cry? Where did this cowherd boys and calves go? Is he going to come and fall at my feet and say, oh, Brahma, please turn the calves and the cows and the boys? What's he going to do? Surely he's very powerful. What's the limit of his power? I want to see that. Krishna wanted Brahma to desire like that because he had some other things in mind as well. So, here's the 13th chapter verse. O Mother, Brahma, who resides in the high planetary system in the sky to observe the activities of the most powerful Krishna in killing and delivering Tadasura, and he was astonished. Now, that same Brahma wanted to show some of his own power and see the power of Krishna, who was engaged in his childhood pastime playing as if with ordinary cowherd boys. Therefore, in Krishna's absence, Brahma took all the boys and calves to another place. Thus he became entangled. For in the very near future, he would see how powerful Krishna was. So the pastime that flowed was the cows started to wander, grazing for fresh grasses. The cowherd boys noted the cow, the calves rather, had started wandering. So Krishna said, you continue your lunch. I'll go find the calves and bring them back. And Krishna went to look for the calves. When Krishna was gone, Brahma came and he stole the cowherd boys, put them in a cage. Krishna came back, the cowherd boys were gone, and then Brahma stole the calf, put them in the cave. And then he came back to the scene of the crime. See, what was Krishna going to do? And when he came back to the scene of the crime, then he saw Krishna with all the calves and the cowherd boys. What's going on? So he went back to the cave. And there was this cast the cowherd boys in the cave. And then he came back to where they were having lunch. And he saw the cast the cowherd boys. Then all of a sudden the cast the cowherd boys each turned into these forms of Lord Narayana. And Krishna was still right in the midst of all of them. And he's a wonderful painter. And not only the forms of Narayana, But the personified Vedas were surrounding each of the forms of the calves and the cowherd boys. Earlier in the verse, if you're this chapter, the number of calves is called asankhyata. Sankhya means to count. And asankhyata means too many to count. There's a detail that's described in Vishwanath Chakravartita 23rd point. It's a big number. When you get beyond a certain billion, trillion, then it's called asankhyata, too many to count. That many calves, that many cowherd boys, that's a lot of forms of Narayana. Each one surrounded by the personified Vedas and all the Devas. And all the Vishnumurtis were surrounded by the opulences headed by Anima city. Those are mystic powers. By the mystic potencies headed by Ajah. Deva Goswami says in his commentary that means Yogmaya. And all of the other spiritual potencies. So mystic potencies, spiritual potencies, and by the 24 elements for the creation of the material world, headed by the Mahatattva. But even in, same thing happens in Canto 2, Chapter 9, where Lord Rama comes before Lord Vishnu, and he sees all the potencies. The potencies of material creation have their spiritual counterpart in the spiritual world. Here, Rama is seeing all of these potencies. Material potencies, spiritual potencies, mystic potencies, all personified surrounding Krishna, offering their obeisances to Krishna and prayers. Then Lord Brahma saw that Kala, time, Svabhava, the nature of all living entities, Samskara, Kama, Karma, and the Gunas, their own independence being completely subordinate to the potency of the Lord, had all taken forms and were worshipping these Vishnumurtis. Each one of the Vishnumurtis. What a scene! What a scene! The verse uses this term, Nija Mahi Mani, Jiva Goswami says, countless opulences. Glories, money. Inconceivable. Brahma fainted. He fell before Krishna. Fainted. He was overwhelmed. It's just a circuit shot. Just fell before Lord Krishna. When he regained his consciousness, he stood up. And he saw the same scene, and then all of a sudden, the whole scene changed. Just as the scene had changed from the cowherd boys to the cowherd, simultaneously, as you see, there's the cowherd boys and all these forms of Narayana. And then the cowherd boys disappeared and the forms of Narayana disappeared. And all that was left was just Krishna. Four-year-old boy, specifically, in the palm of his left hand, because he was eating with his right hand, in the palm of his left hand was some yogurt and some fruit. Just looking at Lord Brahma with unblinking eyes. The verse says he pulled that curtain of Yogamaya, because he had covered Brahma with his Yogamaya potency. Now he pulled it back. There was Krishna alone. Because the calves and the cowherd boys were in the cave. And this all happened in a moment of Brahma. But another purpose of the Leela, just an add-on of Krishna's fulfilling many things by looking the cows who wanted to have Krishna as their calf, and the mothers who wanted to have Krishna as their son. Krishna fulfilled their desire. But it wasn't just Krishna was fulfilling their desire. They were fulfilling Krishna's desire. Because what does Krishna want?
He wants the love of his devotees.
And these devotees are Vrijbasi cows. They're Vrijbasi mothers. They have love for Krishna like Mother Yashoda has love for Krishna. So Krishna was getting happiness from receiving the milk of the mothers and the milk of, these are just 4-year-old boys, milk of the cows, from the form of the calves. And we know that that's time. Their happiness was growing and growing and growing and growing. They were astonished. They were having more love for their sons than they had previously for Krishna. They were astonished. How is this happening? Now, what mother? Mothers may have affection for other children. That's natural. But they have special affection for their own children. That's also natural. But the residents of Vrindavan had more affection for Krishna than for their own children, which is transcendental. Now they were bewildered because the love for their own children was becoming greater than the love for Krishna. Krishna is very kind. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur asks and then answers the following question. What were their feelings towards the mothers and the cows feeling toward Krishna during that 1 year? Because they had Krishna as their own son or as their own calf. So what happened to their love for Krishna during that 1 year? And Vishnu said it increased. Because, not that they had cognizance of, but they had devotion for Krishna, and here is Krishna's own expansion, so he was the source of all these cowherd boys and calves and everything. Their affection for Krishna increased in that one day. Which has its exact bearing on the whole theme of the prayers of Lord Brahma. We haven't even got the prayers of Lord Brahma yet. But here's the prayers. First 8 prayers. We're going to cover through 12 this morning. And then the rest of this evening. The theme being humility. So how is it possible to know the limitlessness of Krishna? How can the tiny, the infinite symbol, how could we say, understand the infinite? How to know the unknowable? And when the unknowable has unlimited potencies. Now, we're very limited. Brahma is very, very powerful. And we're going to hear, so we'll speak of ourselves, how the very, very powerful Brahma processes what he just saw. So, one can know the unknowable by humility. One can enter into the realm of bhakti. Not just the activity, chanting activity, or devotional service activity, that's the external something we might do. But the internal, this is very confidential teaching, the internal move of a devotee that enables the devotee to realize the object of love and become even more inspired by the loving mood towards the object of love. Yes? In the Shikshastra verses, very briefly, the first two, the 7 wonders of the Holy Name described in the first verse, and then the superlative excellence of Krishna's mercy, making access to him so easy. There's no hard and fast rule. Anyone can chant Krishna's name, and he has hundreds and thousands of names. Like Krishna Govinda, etc. And in each and every one of these names, he's invested all of his transcendental potencies. That's a lot of potencies. Think of the potency of Brahma, think of the potency of the sun. Some persons worship the sun. Yes, some people worship the sun. Because after all, the sun sustains the universe, so they worship the sun. But what's the sun? Just a spark. Of this big blazing fire. Just a spark. And it goes out. But Krishna doesn't go out. His potencies are unlimited. Each and every one of his names, all his potencies are invested. That's a lot of potency. But unfortunately, we have no attraction. So what's the solution? Humility. Not ordinary. Saying, gee, I'm sorry, Prabhu, I stepped on your foot. Not ordinary, conventional social humility. Humility deep from the heart. And that means in our relationship with Krishna, that kind of humility. So that humility is very, very prominent, coming from these prayers of Lord Brahma, which are Acharya's love to sight, because they're revealing so many nice things through that medium of humility. And what I've done here is rather than put the word for word, I've done this, tried to do it anyway, color coordinated, showing my humility. Idhyate is the only worshipable word for Abhra Bhapushe, that's this one. Your Krishna's transcendental body is dark like a new cloud. And his dhoti, that's this one, Tadi Ambaraya, his garment is brilliant like the sun. Brahma is his having darshan of Krishna in Vrindavan. He has gunja ornaments. Mother Jasoda sent Krishna out in the morning with the finest of opulent ornaments. The Krishna likes these natural ones. Gunja earrings, peacock feather in his hair, pari picha, peacock feather in his hair. Kavala means he's, whoops, his left hand, he's holding a morsel of food in his hand. And he's decorated by this hurling stick, Vetra, and buffalo horn, Vishana, and his flute. This, the ornaments of a little boy. He looks transcendentally attractive, at the same time, most simple. Barefoot, flute stuck in his belt, buffalo horn, holding his food in his left hand. Acharyas don't get into it. Brahma is, a very cultured person who holds the food in their left hand, even though it works. Mothers try to train their children to reach for things. Well, but try to train us. When you receive something, you give with your right hand and you receive with your right hand. And Krishna's holding the food in his left hand. I mean, what's wrong with this picture? This person who has just exhibited this is the most amazing happiness. Look at him. Lasan Mukhya. I just charmingly beautiful place. He says, having a transcendental darshan, the spiritual form of Krishna. And Krishna, in turn, hearing this glorification, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur saying, Krishna's considering, my dear Brahma, why are you worshipping me? I'm just this little cowboy. You're Lord Brahma. You're the greatest. It means, your name means, you're most powerful, most knowledgeable, all-knowing person in the universe. Why are you offering obeisances to me? So then, Brahma responds, here's why. My dear Lord, neither I nor anyone else can estimate the potency of this transcendental body of yours. Which has shown such mercy to me. And which appears just to fulfill the desire of your pure devotees. So Krishna is doing simultaneously many things when he does one thing. He appears, tells us, there are different reasons. We find in Bhagavad Gita, how Krishna appears in this world. Amongst our children, he knows the verse, Krishna Naya Sadhana. And meaning? There's three reasons why Krishna appears. Pritranaya sadhana. To deliver the devotees. Vinashaya sudushkrita. Smash the dushkritis. Dharma samstha. Established principles of religion. The Prabhupada was sometimes asked, of those, which is the most important? Well, Krishna can do any one of those through the agency of someone else. He can have someone deliver teachings, he can have someone smash the demons, he can have someone come and uplift the devotees. So, essentially, it's for the devotees. That's what this verse is saying. Krishna appears. Sva Icha Mayasya. Sva Icha. Icha means desire. For, because of the desire of the devotees, Krishna appears for that reason. They want to enlighten his devotees. Krishna comes. That's why Krishna comes. Others can do these other things. Krishna comes to enlighten his devotees. But because he's come to enlighten the devotees, he simultaneously is also showing special mercy. Special mercy. Special mercy. To Lord Brahma. Mad anugrahasya. Special mercy to Lord Brahma. What is that special mercy? Lord Brahma, he's the most intelligent person. He was desiring to see the limit of the glories of Krishna, test his powers against the powers of Krishna. Kind of like poking at Krishna to see what Krishna would do. Well, Krishna did it. Krishna showed his mercy. The awesomeness, that which the intellect cannot understand. So we're hearing, so, and simply we hear the glories of the holy name, we chant the holy name, hearing the glories of the holy name, and somehow we can't enter. Yes? Somehow. So what permits one to enter? Well, you get special mercy from Krishna. And to receive that special mercy from Krishna, you have to have your receivers on. To have your receivers on, there has to be more of humility. You have to be eager to receive Krishna's mercy. Same as this message that I was sharing at the beginning of Madhava, said to the cry for Krishna. Just enter into the note, not performance. Same when we're chanting under 64 rounds, like that, like, you know, to have some experience, or Bhujan calls it hankering for peak experiences.
eager for to receive Krishna's mercy in whatever form it may come. Not, no, according to your selection on the menu list. I want mercy like this. Or that. And Krishna, please don't give your mercy these other ways, because then I'll think there's something wrong with you. You didn't hear my requisition slip. You gave something else instead of what I asked for. Mercy comes in different ways, and sometimes it's this, and sometimes it's that. Well, here's some more. How Brahma appreciates this mood of humility that helps one genuinely have a loving relationship with Krishna, genuinely enter into the mercy that comes through the chanting of his holy name. Then he goes on to say, he can't understand, although he can't understand through his intellect. He can understand through devotion. He's going to describe the glories of Krishna. Of course, that which is unlimited, limited cannot know unlimited, like me, but not by intellect, not by gyan. My mind is completely withdrawn from material affairs. That's this section. Manasantarena. Even though my mind is withdrawn from material affairs, I can't understand you. Then what to speak of understanding you? Because I wanted to know the limitlessness of your power. Can't understand you. What to speak of not understanding that? How can I understand the happiness that you're experiencing in your loving relationships with your devotees? It's not accessible to me. Please know that some of our acharyas have that. They share what Krishna's happiness is, but it's only through the medium of devotion, not otherwise. So, again, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur helps in the flow of one verse to the next verse. Brahma is essentially saying, I desire to examine the extent of your potency. I desire to understand how you'll react to my showing my power. In turn, you have shown such mercy to me by giving me glimpse of who you actually are. So, the theme of this little section is knowing the unknowable. How can one estimate something that is unlimited? Which can produce unlimited entities, each one having unlimited potencies. You can't even think that thought, but to speak of understand something of that nature. So the conclusion is a different process than gyan or speculatively understanding those things is required. And that's the bhakti process. So then comes text number 3, which is a very famous verse. Those that are familiar with Ravananda Roy's discussion with Lord Chaitanya, where Lord Chaitanya is asking, what's the goal of life and how to achieve it? That's the question. This is the verse when Ravananda Roy cites it, Lord Chaitanya says, yes! He rejected a number of other things, including Sarva Dharma, Pritija, Mahatam, Sharma, so many other very, very high verses. This is the one. Jyane Prayasa Udra Kasyana Marta Eva. Those who Sthanestita, while remaining situated in their established social positions, continue going to school, continue going to work, continue living performing the duties of life. Sthanestita, you don't have to reject those. Karma sannyas says you have to reject those. Shankaracharya says you have to give it all up. Specifically, you cannot make advancement long. It's wrong.
long description, but you cannot make advance as long as you're in household life, unless you renounce household life. If you don't renounce household life, you'll never make any advance for the spiritual life, period. So renounce household life. Give up all your duties. Karma says that. Bhagavatam teaches, and Bhagavad Gita teaches, stay in your position, sthanistha. Throw away the process of speculative knowledge completely. That's this jnane prayasam buddha-pasya. Prayasa means endeavor. Jnane prayasam, endeavor to understand things by speculative knowledge. Buddha-pasya means completely. Completely. Very important. This is a verse that supports Rupa Goswami's teachings of the definition of bhakti. Definition of bhakti from Nectar of Devotion. Jnani nasya vishanyam jnana karma janabhatam. So this is the jnana anabhatam. Jnani prayasam buddha pasya. I offer obeisances unto you. Very important. Jivanti. This is one note, the big letters. It's going to come up again. And our acharyas speak a lot about this word, jivanti, which means to live. Very simple. Live means to live in your relationship with Krishna. To live according to the mood of devotion. Live that way. And what sustains and supports? Sanvokaritam bhavadiyavartam. That's the process of hearing and chanting. We need a lot of hearing and chanting. Because we're in a toxic atmosphere of this material world that's got so much distraction. Yes? Too many. And there's more and more and more and more and more. And besides life, just the things that people do for distraction. It was a long flight coming to Seattle from New York. It was a non-stop flight. Amazing the number of distracting things that people do for 5.5 hours. I'm not stopped by it. It's amazing. Amazing. And, you know, out of curiosity, I got up and, you know, walked up and down the aisle twice. Just, you know, for fun. To see. Without listing the list of things. I don't even know what these things are. You got some gadgets and these little guys go up and down. 5.5 hours. These are people in suits, you know. They don't speak of anybody else. And movies and that. Brain numbing things. So, devotees, we need a lot, you know, not every now and then, but we need regular immersion in hearing and chanting. Offering all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations. That's the alternative to the jnane prayasam. Bhakti. Where death is life. Now, those that aren't devotees, look at the lives of devotees, and maybe think, well, you people are fanatical. We've heard that sometimes. And like, what do you do for fun? That's what you do for fun. And it's educational, and it's informational, and it's social, and all of our needs are met. We're not You know, it's the spiritual potency, not the material potency. Sattva-kharikam bhava-diya-vata, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees. Then, ye prayaso ajita can mean those who do this. This is the method to contact ajita, because he's indicated what won't do it. The speculative method. Because in, even if you're Lord Brahma, you can't, what to speak of anybody else. You tend somebody else's and a whole team of PhDs and multiple PhDs. Never understand by that method, but by the method of devotion. Dedicating your life to these narrations. And live your life that way, Jivanti. Live in your relationship with Krishna. And it doesn't matter what your position is. Be a housewife, be a working person, be a this, be a that, and whatever it is. It's not situation specific. Whatever your nature is, do that. But live in this way where the personality of Godhead and its glory and its personality and activities and hearing these narrations. Anyway, this is Lord Brahma's, we're only in text 3. Then, he who cannot be conquered by anyone in the three worlds becomes conquered. The unknowable thing known. That which is unlimited can be found. Not unlimitedly, but something, according to the findings of Krishna. When Ramananda Roy offered this verse, he preceded it by saying, pure devotional service without any touch of speculative knowledge is the essence of perfection. Is that what the question? What's the goal of life and the means to achieve it? Well, there's a couple of points, embellishing points, that go along with this. But so, how do we look at the world around us? We're spirits in philosophy, 101. We're a spirit soul, we're not this body. We're all part and parcel of Krishna. He's the source of everything. Okay. 102. We're in the world, and we're looking around, and we don't see things in relation to Krishna. Although, philosophically, we say yes, we live our lives, not yes. So there's a section of the Bhagavatam where the Hamsa avatar speaks to Lord Brahma and his son, the four Kumaras, and explains in essence how to see Krishna. Or he says it in reverse. If we don't see the relationship between Nath and Krishna, we're not seeing accurately. And that smothers or diminishes, it depletes bhakti. So we have to see in the world things in relation to Krishna. And when you start go along that path of seeing things in relation to Krishna, then continuing, this is Ramananda Roy, by the way, speaking to Lord Chaitanya, on the higher stages of bhakti, we practice on the faster stage, but in the higher stage, the Mahabhagavata stage, the advanced devotee, certainly sees everything, mobile and immobile, but does not exactly see their forms. Rather, everywhere he immediately sees manifest the form of the Supreme Lord. Now, I'm going quickly. I attended a class where a religious trooper who spent an hour and a half just discussing this point. And that was a good class. Ravindra Prabhu was a PhD in philosophy. When he heard this while he was still in philosophy, he read it in Prabhupada's books. When a devotee sees a tree, he doesn't just see the tree, he sees Krishna. So he's being a PhD in philosophy.
he started to end life. What does that mean? Now, we can use our intellect. It's not, anesthetize your intellect. But with an intellect alone, it's good to be able to understand that. That capacity of intellect, when it's offered in service to Krishna, as is exactly what Brahma is doing, he's offering brilliant prayers. He's able to see behind the object, he's able to see Krishna. In fact, he's seeing Krishna. It's said in that last section of chapter 13, when Krishna pulled back the yoga maya curtain, he saw Krishna, he saw the whole of Vrindavan, and he saw the whole universe. How overwhelmed can you get? But that's the position bhakti permits us to see in relation to Krishna. So it's kind of a great way around. As long as you're acting through a false ego, you won't see Krishna, you'll see objects that are meant for sense gratification. So, what to do? Which comes first? It's the chicken and the egg question. Which comes first, bhakti or seeing things in relation to Krishna? Well, we cultivate both simultaneously by the hearing and chanting process. Brahma is revealing this to us. Cultivate, like here we are at a Fort Wagner State Park. And before we got here, we know what it was. It was military base during World War II. And then when World War II was over, what are they going to do with military base? They turned it into a state park. And then the state park is used by people to do whatever people do. We come to state parks. And we come as a facility for job retreat. That's seeing in relation to Krishna. And in the kitchen. Is a place where we can prepare things to offer to Krishna and serve to the devotees. It's not like, in one sense it's mystical, but in the other sense it's very practical. And by that mood of wishing, why we come here is to enter more deeply into the holy name. And it's fantastic, perfect timing. School's over. Yes? We picked the right time. School's over. And now, how are you going to use your summer? Not playing the little games or time wasters or stuff like that. Now, hear these wonderful messages of the scripture and enter more deeply into the holy name. I've met many devotees who, having attended these retreats, it was their journey of chanting 16 rounds began. And they've been doing it since. And then those of you that are already chanting 16 rounds, then go more deeply. How? Humility. How? Hear and chant and appreciate. This is the head of our Sampradaya. He's telling us how. Let it go in. Turn your receivers on. He's going to say, some people say, I know all about Krishna. Ever heard that one before? Go distribute books and you'll hear. But Brahma says, as for me, I can't understand. I can't speak like that. I can't do that. I'm a little dwarf looking at the moon. He doesn't use that metaphor. I can't say it myself. Because Krishna's on earth. Here's advancing a little bit. Here's a verse from this chapter 14 in the section we're going to cover this evening. But it's just like a little prelude. Brahma says in one of his prayers, the mercy that you're offering to me is amazing. But it's not so amazing when one considers the mercy that you offer to demons.
even the demon Putana and her two brothers. It says between the verses, Su Kuba. Did you know that Putana had two brothers? Putana had two brothers. Bhakasura and Avasura. So Avasura was just killed at, you know, before lunch. Left at lunch. Now they have lunch. Avasura was the brother of Putana. That was Bhaka, the brother of Putana. And what kind of mercy? Putana, you gave her a position of maid servant of yourself in Goloka Vrindavan, and the other two you entered into their mouths. Bhakasura wanted to eat you, and you entered into his beak, but he couldn't swallow you, but you couldn't go beyond his beak. But you entered into his beak, and then you jumped out of his beak and bifurcated his beak and killed him. And Agasura wanted to kill you. That's why he came. And you entered into his mouth. Because you could have, like you did with Arishtasura and others, pick him up and slap him around and throw him around. Kill him that way. But you didn't do that because the coward boys were inside the body of Agasura. So you entered into his mouth and just expanded yourself. If you place your lotus feet inside the mouth, what mercy! And what to speak of the mercy of the residents of Vrindavan, who have this love for you, love that I can't even comprehend. What is left for you to give to those devotees of Vrindavan? So there's Krishna on the lap of Putana. There's Bhakasura and Krishna in the beak of Bhakasura that is bifurcating. The coward boys have their sticks, they're thinking Krishna thinks he can do this. Come on, look at Bhakasura. When Krishna entered the mouth of Bhakasura, the demigods hidden behind the clouds exclaimed, alas, alas! But the friends of Bhakasura, like Kamsa and other demons, until this happened, God's will is finished. Then what to speak of the residents of Vrindavan? This is such a wonderful painting I wanted to show. All five rasas are in one painting. Then what special affection Krishna shows upon those who have very special affection for him and gopis of their God. What mercy does Krishna show? How can one fathom that love of the gopis for Krishna and Krishna's love for them? So, summary. By the hearing process, we develop such a loving, trusted relationship with Krishna that he will say, I am like this. You wanted to see me as I am? You wanted to serve me? Such a deep desire for so long? And I have tested you so many times and you only chose me? Now be like that. Because he's seeing Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. Now before we know in Canto 2 we saw Lord Vishnu. And we know from Brahma Samhita that he heard the flute song of Krishna. And through his Swavasakhi realization, he realized his relationship with Krishna as a maidservant. But now here he is before Krishna. He's receiving such mercy. And Krishna is answering all of these questions that he had and giving himself. Oh Krishna, oh Ajita, you are conquered by this path, the path of nurturing loving relationships by the hearing process, hearing and chanting process, as we're doing during this retreat. Let me say more about this glorious process, specifically in contrast to Dhyana. So, he identifies this bhakti process as the best. Shreya Shatim, bhakti, devotional service unto you is the best process for self-realization. And here's this word rudasya again. Give up. Jnane, prayasa, rudasya. So, those who give up bhakti and instead take up the jnana process, speculative knowledge process, he will simply undergo trouble, Krishyanti, and will not be able to achieve the desired result, labhyate. As a person who beats an empty husk of meat cannot get grain, but who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization, he only gains trouble. So this is compare contrast. I learned this from Purujan's Art of Teaching course. One of the methodologies for explaining something is compare contrast. So if you want to understand something, you show something else over here, and that there may be some elements of similarity or dissimilarity. It's education method. So he's saying what the bhakti process isn't. And one of the reasons it's not advisable to take up the speculative method is as follows. And here's the grain of wheat, and then after the grain is taken out, all you have is chaff. So those who thrash the chaff, the straw, what do they get? No grain, just trouble. Hard labor, that's all. They get some muscles. Chaff thrashing muscles. And misery. No pain. But no labdhante, labhyate. Labhyate. There's no self-realization, attained self-realization, or also of the Krishna. So he, Brahma, wanted to understand Krishna by challenging his own power against Krishna's power. Guess who won? But he didn't, you know, because Krishna is very merciful, he got mercy. But by that method of speculative knowledge, one can't sing in our chanting process, just numerical chanting. Bhakti Vinod Thakur calls it the counting game. We want to increase our chanting quantitatively and qualitatively. But the bhakti principle has to become stronger and in order to increase the quality of our chanting. The theme behind all of this is humility. Start there. Not the material kind, the spiritual kind of humility. Okay, I'm going way over time here. So here's the next verse, text 5. O Almighty Lord, in the past, many yogis in this world achieved the platform of devotional service by offering their endeavors unto you and faithfully carrying out their prescribed duties. Through such devotional service, again, perfected by the process of hearing and chanting about you. So there's two things. There's their work, and then there's their hearing and chanting. And both in terms of the work and the hearing and chanting, both, there's an internal, how do you regard the work? How do you regard the subject matter of hearing and chanting? And the activity itself. It's the bhakti principle. It's internal matter. So, detaching from the fruits by offering to the Supreme, and by nurturing everything by the hearing and chanting process. They came to understand you, O Ajita, and could easily surrender to you and take a Tim Pranam. They went back to Godhead. So these are the elements of bhakti that we should be aware of. These are the elements that will help us understand Krishna, experience our relationship with Krishna, and eternally serve Krishna. Text 6. Non-devotees, however, cannot realize you in your full personal feature. Nevertheless, it may be possible for them to realize your expansion as the impersonal Supreme. By cultivating direct perception of the self within the heart. But some yogis, even impersonalists, they approach realization of the Supersoul with the objective of something impersonal. But it's not easy. Just as we know in chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't recommend it. Why? But they can do this only by purifying their minds and senses of all conceptions of material distinction. How do you do that? No. How did we get here? Most of us had a GPS. But you know, with no material distinctions, how do you get here? How do you do anything? How do you walk across the room? How do you go have breakfast? How do you take a bath in the morning? How do you brush your teeth? How do you do anything? No material distinction. Practically speaking, how do you do that? I mean, it's not practical, it's not. But no material distinctions. And give up all attachments to material sense objects. Only this way will your impersonal feature manifest itself to them. So which one do you want? The bhakti and the fruit of bhakti, where you have the choice is easy. For those that don't, well, they're not left with nothing. They're left with some realization. They can't realize Krishna's personal feature. They can't. But they can realize something, the impersonal feature. But you know, to achieve it, this is just expanding the message of chapter 12, Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is very difficult. Fix the mind on the formless for those who are embodied. In time, learned philosophers or scientists might be able to count all the atoms of the earth. The particles of snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun. Scientists are still trying to decide if it's particles or waves. Right? The stars, another luminary. When Nanda Sutta was saying that there's, as we were coming from the airport, there's a over there's Mount Rainier, and over there is another mountain that hits Halloween. How much snow is there? Who knows the blizzard? You know what I'm talking about?
A lot.
Huh?
Just a lot. Lot, I don't know.
So who can count? That's just one mountain that has a lot of snow. Who can count all the particles of snow, snowflakes in that mountain? But supposing you could. Supposing you could count all the snowflakes anywhere on the planet. You can't. But supposing you could. Amongst those learned men who could possibly count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who
has descended onto the surface of the earth for the benefit of all living entities. Just, you know, catch the wave of Krishna's kindness. That's where attention should go. Not the, the speculative efforts to understand the unlimited. It's impetus for devotion. That's the message. And a little embellishment of this. This is Uddhava, a painting of Uddhava speaking to Krishna, where after Krishna departs and Uddhava's there and Vidura comes before him, he speaks of Krishna in this way. Kamba dayulam sharanam prajima. How shall I take shelter of one more merciful? Uddhava says to Vidura. So what is the limit of the mercy of Krishna? What is the mercy that the residents of Vrindavan are receiving? Shukadeva Goswami says, inconceivable. How many difficult austerities have these cowherd boys undergone? That he who is the goal of all yogis, they're sitting having lunch with him, and playing with him, joking with him. This is Uddhava's appreciation of Krishna. We're hearing another learned person, but Brahma's appreciation of Krishna. Unlimited. So Brahma is declaring, you have unlimited qualities and each of them are expandable to an unlimited degree. But at first one cannot realize any of them. It's like their very position is no qualities. How dry. How hard, how unsatisfying. Because you have to maintain oneness. So as soon as you have an object and its qualities, then you have two, so you can't have both. Try to conceive of what unlimitedly beautiful means. How beautiful is unlimitedly beautiful? How attractive is unlimitedly attractive? How compassionate is unlimited compassion? Brahma is very eloquently and beautifully describing his realization of Krishna. That's perceivable for the bhakti process. Now he wants to go into the internal activities of bhakti and then next the external activities of bhakti. Very famous verse. I don't think I'm going to finish in time. Very, very famous verse, quoted twice in Bhagavad Gita purports. Tathena pampam sursimi shimano. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. So he's thrown away speculative efforts. Now he's just focusing on the bhakti process. And how does, when we're focused on the bhakti process, there are these three elements. And we'll just cover them briefly, and we'll again this evening we'll cover them again. So important. Mukti Padeshva Jayava. What becomes eligible for going back to Bhakti? So these three things. One is accepting your fate, destiny. Things that are happening in my life that are outside of my control. What to do. And the message of that first line is you just accept them. I've said this several times, that we had one retreat in Giridhari which just focused on this one line, this first line. We called it Say Yes to Krishna. Everyone that came got to say yes to Krishna, but I can still remember it. And there's different ways of saying yes to Krishna instead of saying no to Krishna, because our misery comes by saying no to Krishna instead of saying yes to Krishna. One of the things that we did, just a little sharing, Krishna Leela was the facilitator of the discussion, and she had these flip charts set up, and somebody writing on the flip charts. And so, just, you know, the invitation was, say something that you don't like. They would kind of giggle, didn't have much to say. But she wanted them to take it seriously. Something that happens in life that you don't like. So, you know, once it started, it was like a waterfall. We had like 18 pages of stuff. And everyone was funny, and people were laughing, and things they don't like to happen. Okay, we have a nice, good, long list. Now, that's a say no to Krishna. And what if we were to turn it around and say yes to Krishna? What would that look like? So to get the message across, one of the things was role play. Some people volunteered, they sat in the front. They had written the you know, I don't like this. So they were in the role playing. And then somebody else was, you know, they were complaining about something they don't like. And some of it got a little tense because it was husband-wife relationships and something they don't like. And then, you know, right there in front of everybody, I had to turn around and say yes to Krishna, because it's not just no to the other person, it's no to Krishna. And I'm saying yes to Krishna. The arrangements of life, you don't necessarily have to like the arrangements of life, but we have to say yes to Krishna. Say yes to Krishna. So whatever is our destiny, tatyajakampam susadityamama. Say yes. Not like embrace something that's harsh, but in your relationship with Krishna, embrace Krishna. Because in this case, Brahma knows he's going to get a big reaction. And he could, as he's Brahma, to say, Krishna, please reduce the reaction. Or neutralize it, or something. You know, work around, or something. He's just accepting, whatever it is, I accept it. Like Maharaj Pariksit did when he was cursed, and like so many nice examples. He's saying yes to Krishna. That's your faith and destiny. Then, when the our past misdeeds come, when our past misdeeds come, how do you regard, here comes the reaction of my past misdeeds? Put this illustration of King Srichaketu, who's in his vimana up here, and he's being cursed by Parvati in the presence of all these big sages. And what does he do? This reaction of actually was just a misunderstanding of his position in relation to Lord Shiva. He accepted. For him, as for one who has taken shelter of Krishna, Svarga Apavarga Narakeshu, heaven, Svarga Apavarga, liberation. Narakeshu is hell. Whatever that situation is, what is indifferent to the situation, it comes as the fruit of one's karma. Why? How is that possible? How is that possible? Narayana, Parayana, or Vasudeva Parayana, or complete shelter in Krishna. Complete shelter in Krishna. No other shelter. What about a bad one? What about a good one? What about sex gratification? What about no other shelter? Just Krishna. Then it's possible. When your destiny comes, comes, you're walking down the path of your life, and events happen. We all know this one because we're all walking down the path of life, and events happen. And some things are just outside of our control. We all know that. Land a job, you're treated, it rains. What are you going to do? And that's a text message in there, and you call the rain off eventually. And then something in a personal way happens in your life. Keep your attention upon Krishna. Narayana, Parayana. This is the language of the Bhagavan. This is what we're learning from Lord Brahma also. And with body, mind, and words offering obeisances to the Supreme Lord, I was thinking there's hundreds of nice paintings to illustrate. Dhruva Maharaj offering his obeisances. This case is Brahma offering obeisances. Indra offering obeisances. And offer obeisances. That is, our position of shelter taking in Krishna doesn't change. It's not created by the circumstances, it's not changed by circumstance. There's only one thing. That's the residence of Vrindavan. That's the gift of love of the resident of Vrindavan that Lord Chaitanya wanted to give. Just shelter Krishna, that's all. They don't know anything else. They don't want to know anything else. They have one thing. The happiness of Krishna. That's their life. Now, show this image. Just quickly, this verse, text number 8 in Lord Brahma's prayers, is so important that it's quoted, commented upon by our acharyas in many different ways. Here is Prabhupada speaking in Nectar Devotion about this verse, text 8. This statement of Srimad Bhagavatam should be the guide of all devotees. We're trying to be devotees at least. A devotee who is not perfectly free from the resultant reactions. Does that match anybody's situation? Those devotees who are not perfectly free from the resultant actions, should therefore continue to act in Krishna consciousness seriously, even there may be so many impediments. When such impediments arise, we should simply think of Krishna and expect his mercy. Expect his mercy. You may get a little impatient. Where's his mercy? Or his mercy may come in form other than, you know, what we put on our requisition slip. We wanted a different type of mercy than what may come. And Krishna's mercy is for sure, Prabhupada concludes, that is the only solace. If a devotee, this is this Jivanti, if the devotee passes his days in that spirit, it is certain that he's going to be promoted to the abode of the Lord. Chapter 10, next devotion. Expecting the Lord's mercy. Jiva Goswami says, very simply, it's elaborate, but the essence is just live. And what does living mean? Living means Krishna consciousness. Live in Krishna consciousness. Live with that shelter. Just do that. And you know, the complications of the material world will go on. You know, the place is crazy. It's getting crazier. All around us is getting crazy. All over the world and all around town is getting crazy. So what to do? Jivanti. Just live this life of nourishing yourself and hearing and chanting Krishna consciousness. And surely you'll go back to Godhead. You'll inherit the kingdom of God. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I think I'm going to end with this, although there's more. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Brahma has already just described the imperfectness of the Gyan process. Now he's going to further elaborate on the Bhakti process. And here's what he writes. The devotee understands that the happiness and distress that he experiences due to performing bhakti and committing aparadhas are the mercy of the Lord. Anyone experience any mercy, having any misery sometimes? It is like a father who sometimes makes his child drink milk and sometimes makes him drink bitter nimba, juice. And sometimes embraces and kisses him and sometimes admonishes him. The devotee thinks, this is the arrangement of the Lord working for his benefit. Quote, the Lord knows, and I do not know. Karma and time have no effect on the devotee, so it is his personal arrangement. By his mercy, he sometimes gives me happiness and sometimes gives me distress, considering how to engage me in his service. That's the say yes to Krishna message. The Brahma is autobiographical. He's describing, I'm going to get a reaction. I know I'm going to get a reaction. Now what to do about it? I know I'm going to get a reaction, Lord. Now I'm getting the reaction. Corrupt the karma. Well, how to live through that situation where your mind doesn't move? He's giving the indication. There's three elements. Certain destiny, that's going to come regardless. A certain amount of, you know, mix of good, bad, and whatever, due to my past activities, just accept it. Accept it, accepting it, what should I do? Body, mind, and words fully take shelter of the Supreme Lord. Nourish all of that in the hearing and chanting process. Surely you'll go back. Immediate circumstance may change, may not change. Surely the soul, the impermanent, is impermanent. And the soul's position in relation to Krishna is definitely permanent. And so, those are Jiva Goswami's comments and Bhishma Chakravarti Thakur's comments. Then comes the next section, which I'm way past my time. I'm enjoying this. I hope you're not too fatigued long journey coming here. There's just four verses in this section. Maybe I'll just sneak them in because the next part is really, really special. So he apologizes. We all know how important making apology is for mistakes. It's part of our Vaishnava culture. So Brahma's teaching us, my Lord, I'll just read. Just see my uncivilized, impudent anarium. To test your power, I tried to extend my illusory potency to cover you, the unlimited and primeval super soul, who bewildered even the masters of illusion. What am I compared to you? I'm just like a small spark. In the presence of a great fire. And then he continues to just pour these. What am I? Small creature measuring seven spans of my own hand. I am enclosed in a fog-like universe composed of material nature. The total material energy falls into ether, water, air, earth. And what is your glory? Unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body, just as particles of dust pass through the openings of a screen window. I'm inside one of those. And those are passing through the pores of your body, like particles of dust passing through a screen. You've all seen this. Anyone not seen this? The sunlight's coming in the morning, and there's a screen, you see the particles of dust floating around. And I, Lord Brahma, am inside of little particles. And you're the vastness of everything. How can I fathom you? And I have the audacity to challenge you. Oh, Lord, our hopes are just. Doesn't mother take offense when a child in her womb kicks with its leg? And is there anything in existence, whether designated by various philosophers as real or unreal, that is actually outside your happiness? That's the end of this section, by the way. So I'm like the child in the womb of the mother. Someone kicked me. And you're the mother. Please don't take offense. It's my innocence and foolishness and kindness and insignificantness.
Maharaj, you said just a few slides ago in that one picture there are five rasas. Could you point them out to us?
You want to point them out? Yeah. Well, neutrality, servitorship, friendship, principal affection, and conjugal. But I have to go back to the slide. I'm about to say them. Oh. There's trees, there's cows, neutrality. Dasa, some of the cows are friends of Krishna, they're friends. Some of them are in servitude. Dharuka is one who's in servitude. Dharuka is one of Krishna's chariot driver, Gorakha, but there's a Dharaka in Vrindavan, which is, he carries things for Krishna in the mood of service. And then his cowherd friends, his parents, and the gopis, there are pictures of the world.
Who would be in Sangha?
Anything else?
Yes? Use the mic, please.
So the verses 9 to 12, are they spoken by Brahma in spirit of humility? Which will title Brahma the apology? Is that what it conveys to humility?
So I heard humility clearly, but the rest of it I couldn't hear.
So 9 to 12 verses which have the subtitle Brahma's apology. Do they convey this humility?
Which ones? All
like
of them?
The last four.
Last four.
Yeah.
Well, sure, he's asking for apology. He's asking for forgiveness. Persons that are not humble don't do that. But the basis in support, the genuineness of his asking for apology is indicated in the videos. I'll ask your question in reverse. Has it ever happened to you, the answer is yes, has it ever happened to you that persons say, oh, Prabhuji, Mataji, I'm sorry. And you wonder, do they even know what they're, if I were to ask them, what is it you're saying you're sorry for? Maybe it's life on the other side. It's something that's social. May not be very deep in terms of apology. But so Brahma, the apology is in these verses, but apology for what? So yeah, the humility is there also. That's your question.
You mentioned that we can stay in our position and we can just be chanting and hearing and offer the service to Krishna and we can go back to Godhead. Now I was thinking that when we are in a position and we are doing all those things, and that is a kind of a mixed bhakti.
Yeah.
So what is pure bhakti is when we are completely devoted towards Krishna.
Externals may look the same. These three big factors are internal. So it's how you regard each of these three things. But one of them is this third one. when you're offering obeisances to Krishna and those who represent Krishna, what's in your heart? It's internal. So sincere, genuine of offering of obeisances. Go back to the first one. Do the second one. The thing that you mentioned specifically, offering the fruits of your work. So there's offering, there's conventional, and then there's devotional. This past week, Tuesday, this week, Tuesday, I was at 22nd Avenue and one of the people attending the program was describing an experience that he had, a brahmachari, kind of quasi-brahmachari. He was doing book distribution somewhere, and it was really good, so this name, he did book distribution, he hadn't had his lunch. So then he went to a shop and he bought some potato chips. He was describing all this. So he was walking down the sidewalk, going to the place where he was staying, and he opened the bag of potato chips and said the prayers in his mind. And it was then he went into the elevator. It was this whole story. But it's, offering something to Krishna is not just a formality. There's the external. But you don't, if real devotion, you just wouldn't offer Krishna potato chips anyway. But what does people walk down the street and open up a bag? No. You don't do it that way. That was devotion. It was, in, by his own words, it was a formality. So we can, with formality, do things, and we can, with devotion, do things. So offering things to Krishna. So the difference between mixed and pure, which is your question, is the devotion is very genuine. Because when the devotion is very genuine, then we do externals very carefully, because it's for Krishna. So the children here that go to school. So we go to school. One of the dilemmas, it's the whole topic, but one of the dilemmas for young people is they have two different lives. They have the life at school, and then the life when they're with their devoted parents. And they have two different worlds. Commonly. So how to do the go to school part when you're doing it for Krishna? It's not, you know, you're not chameleon, depending upon the atmosphere that you're pink or you're blue. Unlike them or unlike us. So, same for adults. We are, how can we live our lives where we're broken? We have to, like, in people's face, but we're groanies. It's how we live our lives. Inside and outside. So when that devotion is genuine, it's not just offering the results, it's, I'm next, it's, I'm doing this for Krishna. And at different stages of life, where I do different things because it's appropriate for that stage of life, and I do that for Krishna. That's not mixed. At any stage, it's also unmixed. And then comes the tests when there's some difficult circumstance that you can't do anything about. It's, you know, destiny. And if you, and it's, you know, how do you regard calamity and complexity and events of destiny? I preface by saying Krishna is in our hearts and he knows each one of us and he knows what each one of us needs in order to become pure in devotion. And so Krishna orchestrates, he's orchestrated all of this. He orchestrated the event with the cowherd ladies and the cows, and also Lord Brahma. And the cowherd boys, you know, the whole Vrindavan. He's interacting with them in one way. Yeah. Krishna's interacting with each of us according to our requirement. So pure devotion is, we don't to accept it. As Vishwanath Chakravarti has described so nicely. Sometimes this, sometimes that. I don't know. But I accept it, you know. That's all I accept. That's your devotion. There's no condition, no pause, no question mark over the circumstances. I may not know why Krishna is doing this or that, embracing me or trampling me. I may not know why Krishna is doing that. But it's fine. I'm saying yes to Krishna. That's the next. Next is I have my condition.
See the problem,